What's up, everybody? Before you get to your podcast episode, here's what's coming up on the latest Move the Sticks podcast here, DJ and Bucky.
We're going to break down every NFL game, got top questions, and then we're also going to look to the college slate to see who can come up with the right picks, make sure I get back to the league.
Yeah, college football, NFL football, we've got you covered on Move the Sticks. Download on iTunes as well as NFL.com/podcast. Check out our videos on YouTube.
Fantasy freaks and geeks, what is up? You're listening to the NFL Fantasy Live podcast. I'm your host, James Coe, joined alongside MG, my guy, Marcus Grant. What's going on?
What is going on? It's Friday.
It is Friday. West Virginia. How's the weather in West Virginia today, Matt Harmon?
I wouldn't know. I'm not from there. I haven't been there.
And the man behind the glass, Alex Gelhar, the whiz kid from Wisconsin. What's cracking, man?
Not too much. It's exciting Friday. We have week ones in the books. We had some new stuff to look at. That's always great. I'm pumped for week two already.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. No question about it. Now, all right, listen. We don't have, and as Matt Harmon pointed out, in memoriam.
In memoriam.
R.I.P.
It's R.I.P.
It's that part in the Oscars where everything gets quiet and sad.
There's no franchise live with us here, at least not in the room, but we will be checking in on the franchise.
He lucked into his random weekday off, because we all work Sundays, so we each get one random weekday off. He lucked into his being Friday the way it fell, so it's good for him to get like a full weekend, Friday and Saturday, but he's missing the pod. So
hell of a pull for him to get 2 days off in a row during the NFL season. That's like unheard of.
Hell yeah.
Unless, you know, you work on the floor above
us. Yeah.
So guess what? We're going to be doing, introducing the franchise Fiery Phoner. Later on today.
Love
he's going to be talking to us about running backs, best, worst sleeper running backs based off of touch opportunities. A great beast of a report that he puts out. He and Harmon put out pretty much following every single game on Sunday. We're going to be talking about week two next gen stats analysis, the wide receiver whisperer, prognosticator, as I call him. Matt Harmon is going to be talking to us about some next gen stats that he looked at and some wide receivers that could explode this week. Fantasy Audibles as well will be making its podcast debut. That's a Alex Gelhar joint. And then we'll talk about potential shootouts, worrisome matchups, and interesting matchups. Try to get to almost every single game, and of course, daily daps as well. We'll start the show by talking about Thursday night football.
Wow. I'm rough. We're going to leave that in, too.
Sick.
That's, you know, guys, we're just going to talk about Thursday night football. We're going to restart the whole show. And here, how about some headlines sound?
Okay, sure.
Let's do that.
Let's do that.
The camera highlights in the world of sports.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Breaking news.
Whistles go. Woo!
I like turtles.
We continue to follow breaking news.
Watch the news because I'm a kid.
So y'all need to hide your kids, hide your wife.
So Thursday Night Football, apparently Matt Forte is God. 32 touches. Three touchdowns. What did he have, 100 rushing
100
yards?
100 yards on the nose.
Oh, boy. He was a beast.
I'm just amazed they've given him 59 touches
it's
in
insane.
2 weeks.
Wait, I want to know, what happened to this whole offseason thing of, hey, we're going to work in Bilal Powell?
We're going to have a committee here.
That was
what true. Happened to that?
It's a giant shrug emoji.
I don't understand. I thought all of the indication was that they were going to break up the touches for Matt Forte and Bilal Powell. I don't even – has Bilal Powell seen the field?
Yeah.
I mean, like, yeah, when he runs to and from the locker room.
Hey, he had a carry for 2 yards and a catch for 1 yard last night.
Oh, it makes no, – I'm sick about it because I thought Bilal Powell was a very good sleeper this year, and he hasn't seen the field at all.
But yet, here's why I think he's still worth holding on to.
Okay.
Because if Forte gets hurt,
yeah.
And by the way, I wouldn't rule that out considering how much they're just jamming the ball down his throat right now.
It's true.
Powell inherits a really great workload because there's no other running backs really of note on that roster.
Kyrie Robinson got injured.
Injured and waived.
I also feel like even if Forte doesn't get hurt, they just can't keep giving him the ball at this clip the rest of the season. At some point, they're going to have to back off that a little bit, and so that's where
some of these runs too are tough. Dude.
Yeah,
I mean, these are not easy runs that he's getting.
Well, it's watching that thing last night. Early on, Forte wasn't great. He just kind of kept grinding. He got the three touchdowns, which obviously is huge. But it wasn't until later in the game when I think the Bills were a little bit worn down
that
Forte started to rip off some decent-sized runs. Because for, I think, 2.5, maybe 3 quarters, he wasn't all that great.
He only averaged 3.3 yards per carry last night. So kind of to your point, yeah, it's not really like he was the most efficient runner last night. Obviously, he crushed for fantasy because he had 3 touchdowns.
Yeah.
But at the same time, yeah, I don't know if we can really expect – you know, Franchise posed the question in our Slack chat today. Will Forte be the RB1 or will he be on IR by week 6? I mean, I said both. Like,
he's the RB1 and then promptly goes to IR, right?
Yeah, right. I mean, but that's – like, yeah, it's pretty unsustainable for him to continue to see this workload, I would imagine, at 30 years old. But great to see him playing so well.
I will say this. Oh, I mean, you look at the schedule coming up. I would trade him, Matt Forte, at his absolute peak right now. He's going to go on the road against the Chiefs. You got to think Tom Bahali's starting to come around in terms of his health.
He's getting better. Yep.
And the Chiefs at home at Arrowhead, no joke. Then you look at the Seahawks, Steelers, and Cardinals are the next 3 games after the Chiefs. That is such a brutal schedule.
It's a brutal schedule.
Tell me Matt Forte is not a prime sell-high candidate right now. Coming off of 3 touchdowns?
Maybe. I'm not going to sell this kind of workload, though, now, and especially in against some of those matchups. Throw out Pittsburgh and their run defense because the Washington running backs are from that week. But Arian Foster got
But even going back to last year.
Yeah, Pittsburgh does have a good
they
run.
They do have a solid run defense, but the volume could be here for Forte still, too. And the Seahawks, Arian Foster did a lot of damage through the air where we know Matt Forte excels at.
That's a good point.
And he's attached to what right now is looking like a high-powered offense. Ryan Fitzpatrick played quite well last
night. Oh, my gosh,
too.
He was slinging it.
So I wouldn't sell high quite yet.
All right. There you go. Yeah. We will agree to disagree. That's okay. as you mentioned, Ryan Fitzpatrick looked great. Are you guys comfortable? I mean, he's a streaming quarterback. There's no question about it.
Yeah.
Brandon Marshall, he went down with a knee injury, twisted his leg a bit. I thought there's no way he's coming back. I thought there's no way he's coming. He went into the locker room and then came back.
It looked bad. He wasn't even in the locker room terribly long, considering how bad that thing looked. But he came back and had himself a great game. And
I thought he looked good.
Props to Brandon Marshall. It is worth keeping an eye on, though, over the next week to see what happens. It's nice that, you know, because they play Thursday night, they get a longer break. So
it
gives you a little more time to worry about that.
Yep, that's right. What did he end up with in terms of yardage?
101.
101. All right, there you go.
And Fitzpatrick, by the way, I mean, they went deep last night. He averaged 11 yards per attempt. They had a 35 catch, longest catch for Eric Decker, 37 for Brandon Marshall. Quincy Enunwa caught a 34-yarder. Jalen Marshall even caught a 27-yarder. They were chucking it downfield.
They said on ATN, I think, that he had the most pass completions over 15-plus air yards in like a decade or something like that on the ATN podcast. I forget the exact stat, but.
Yeah, it was nuts, man. I mean, and that's kind of unusual for Fitzpatrick, who we consider like more of a pop gun arm with like a spread offense sort of thing. But they were chucking it down the field, and that's what – when you have now what I think we can say like 3 big, tough receivers that win the ball in the air, including Quincy Enunwa, that you can do that.
Quincy Enunwa.
Man, too bad Greg Roman couldn't figure out how to stop that.
Yep. rough go for Greg Roman. By the way, quick, before we move on to the Bills. Eric Decker.
let's just get this out of the way now, James.
Yeah. the listeners have been demanding it on Twitter.
Do you believe now?
And if not, what the hell is wrong with you?
No. Oh, God. it's so crazy, the whole Eric Decker, Danny Woodhead thing that's going on in this body. Like, I like them as players. I liked Eric Decker when he was in college. He played in Minnesota, right?
Yes. Correct.
I loved him at Minnesota. One of the toughest dudes, and still is one of the toughest dudes. I remember him playing Cal, all right? Minnesota taking on Cal. There was nothing we could do to stop this guy. There was a point when
now we know what this is about.
No.
Truth comes out.
Hurt feelings.
the bottom line was, I remember he got knocked out of that game for like a play because he took a helmet shot to the chin. The guy came back and was just absolutely torturing Cal the rest of the game.
Right, so
fabulous player.
Why don't you like him in fantasy when all he does is catch touchdowns?
Or 80 yards.
Or 80 yards.
He has 80 yards and or a touchdown in the last 18 games.
All I've ever said about Eric Decker,
Jay.
All I've ever said about Eric Decker is that I don't want to rely on double-digit touchdowns
or 80
for
yards.
Eric
or 80
Decker.
Yards.
That's all I've ever said.
All I know is that as soon as he caught that touchdown, I couldn't tweet at you fast enough.
Yeah. Same. I feel like we all added James at once.
My timeline goes bazonkers anytime Eric Decker makes a play.
Which is every week.
Because you insist on arguing with facts and data and numbers.
Oh, my God. Okay, fine. Look.
Anyways.
Eric Decker, great player.
Great.
I love him.
Fire him up every week.
Okay, great. He's a top three wide receiver in the game. Is that fair?
Oh, good. Glad we got that
out of
the way.
Good.
Appreciate it.
All right, Bills. Greg Roman's fired now.
Which makes no sense. Bills, what are you guys doing?
You're scapegoating. That's what they're doing.
Scoring points was not the problem.
In week one, it was the problem.
Yeah, in week one, their offense was terrible. Even last night, they were not like a consistent offense by any means. I think per Next Gen Stats that on passes over 20 yards, Tyrod Taylor had a perfect quarterback rating, but on under 20 yards, he had a 65 quarterback rating.
You take out just his three touchdown passes, he was 15 of 27 for a .124. That's 4.59 yards per attempt. With a 52 quarterback rating.
All right, now, I hate to be this guy, but, I mean, look, the three touchdown passes, here's the thing.
They happened.
I know. I was like, I don't want to say they happened, but they happened. No, but here's the thing about the touchdown passes. See, the thing about the Bills' offense in week one was that they went short a lot, and they were getting skewered. They were getting skewered by the media in terms of being so conservative and safe. They wanted to put a little air in the ball. You know what I mean? So I'm not that surprised, especially given Tyrod's skill set. He's got a fabulous deep ball. We saw it last year.
I'm not sold yet. I'm still worried about Tyrod simply because it's one of those things. You look at the final numbers and he had almost 30 fantasy points.
Right.
Sitting on
the bench.
But. Ugh. Man, aside from he had the one play where Marquise Goodwin
just ran by Darrell.
Runs by Darrell Revis.
By the way,
I'm
calling him Ed Revis now.
Ed Revis?
I'm calling him Ed Revis.
Ed Revis.
Why? Because he's past tense.
Oh.
Ed Revis.
So you had that play. You had the broken play where Greg Salas, who I didn't even know was still in the league, somehow got behind the defense and makes a play. Beyond that, Tyrod didn't look good, and
he looked uncomfortable.
He looked uncomfortable, and this offense is not going to prosper long term trying to live on the backs of Marquise Goodwin and Greg Salas. It just can't. So I don't know if Sammy Watkins is hurt more than anybody's willing to let on. I'm not sure what's going on with that. But
two
they
catches
need him
for
to...
20 yards and wasn't on the last two.
And
drives.
Robert Woods was on a milk carton. I have no idea where he was. They've got to find something else. I mean, I saw him like standing over a pile once.
He did have 10 yards.
I feel like Robert Woods is in the upside down.
He is in the upside down.
He's just gone.
Does that make Greg Roman the Demogorgon?
I think so.
All right.
All right. Let's wrap this up and move on. We're spending all this time on this.
So this also comes from Next Gen Stats, too.
All right.
Revis only covered Watkins one time last night.
Mm-hmm. Like, wow.
So
Marcus Williams actually kind of locked him down.
Yeah, so I was like, there's kind of like you can take this multiple angles, that piece of information. You can say, like, well, one, maybe the Jets are no longer going to use Revis to shadow top wide receivers anymore. After he got whipped all over the schoolyard by AJ Green in week one.
Right.
Or the Jets were just like, yeah, this guy is banged up. Watkins, we don't need to worry about him. But, you know, he didn't look so terribly banged up to me last night. And also, I'm kind of, in terms of Sammy Watkins, who I know that a lot of people are freaking out about, and justifiably so, at least he gets 10 days off between now and his next game.
We'll see. All right. How about Chris Ivor? He's going to be out again. They're in Jacksonville. They've got a fabulous matchup. There's no question about it. How good do you feel about T.J. Yeldon?
I'd feel better if he – I don't know if I trusted him more, but the volume is going to be there. And San Diego gave up, obviously, as we know, last week, a ton of work through the air to Bill Spencer Ware and Kendrick West,
right,
which is a space where Yeldon succeeds. So
they were awful against running back.
Right. I like him this year. He's definitely a top 20 running back for me this week.
Danger zone pick. Shoelace. I'm just saying.
No.
Ooh.
No.
He played 11% of the snaps.
He did not look good.
And Yeldon played 88%. So.
I hear what you're saying, but I will say this. Ivory was a super late scratch
Yeah.
Last week.
Yeah.
I think the team knows, or came into this week, week two, knowing that Ivory's availability would be extremely limited, if at all. I would almost guarantee you they got Shoelace a little bit of work and try to figure out how to mix him into this lineup. I wouldn't be surprised if we see a little bit of Shoelace. I'm not saying a lot, just a little bit more than what we saw last week.
As long as he's not driving his car into a lake or anything like that.
Oh, boy. Russell Wilson practiced in full Wednesday. Looked pretty good, apparently, on Thursday, so say the reports. He says he's ready to rock and roll versus the L.A. Rams. Still weird for me to say that. Is there anybody in this game you like?
I like Doug Baldwin a lot. I was just writing.
I mean, a lot, though?
Yeah, no, I think he could have a really good game, especially with Wilson banged up. They're probably going to want to get the ball out of his hands faster. That means really good, you know, short to intermediate throws to Doug Baldwin. And the Rams got beat up on by Jeremy Curley out of the slot in week one, and it felt weird to say that just now. But Baldwin runs most of his routes from the slot. So I could see him getting, you know, 8 to 10 catches.
This is 2016, game. Right, when you just said that the Rams got beat up by Jeremy Curley?
Yep.
He didn't, like...
Yeah,
back in time.
Wow,
our pride home team here in Los Angeles.
Yes,
got beat up by Jeremy Curley in the slot week one. So now I expect the Seahawks to employ a similar game plan to get the ball out of Russell Wilson's hand quickly on the road against a D-line that's pretty good.
There's got to be a lot of worry though in regards to Russell Wilson and the running game in general, because the offensive line in week one looked like an absolute mess. Again, we've heard about how they've been graded as one of the worst, if not the worst, offensive line in the NFL by Pro Football Focus. The Rams, they have a fabulous defensive line, and they've played Seattle very, very tough. If they're going to ask Russell Wilson to scramble and he can't do that on a bum ankle, I don't know, man. This offense, it looks like this is one of those games that could line up to be a very low-scoring game.
It will probably be low-scoring. And you mentioned the Rams, like, could, you know, it would be so, like, Jeff Fisher and this Rams team over his tenure to lay a complete egg in week one, get shut out, get embarrassed, have us all, you know, in complete panic about Todd Gurley and et cetera, and then they come out and dog walk the Seahawks on the
just
road.
Get up to
that.
30.
I mean, that would be completely within their MO. I mean, I'm not going to project that to happen.
No,
but
that's what happened last year. They beat the Seahawks 34-31 in overtime, and then came out and put up 10 points against the Redskins. Like, what?
Yeah. Makes no sense.
So anyway, I don't know. This matchup, Baldwin's a good call, Harmon. This matchup kind of scares me. Although one thing is the running backs could do some work between the tackles. I mean, especially if Russell Wilson is immobile. They've anointed Rawls the starter, jumping ahead a little bit in the rundown.
Yep,
but
yep,
they could try and feed the rock and do that real, like that 1-2 punch as they did last week. You know, they each had, what, 12 and 15 carries?
Yep.
They could try and ride those guys a lot to slow down the game and take some pressure off of Wilson.
I wouldn't be surprised. How comfortable are you playing Thomas Rawls? I mean, he's not an RB2, but I think he's a flex. He's worth a flex.
Yeah, I mean, I think he's worth a flex. And, you know, obviously to Harmon's point, we don't really know which Rams team is going to show up after they got embarrassed in the season opener. But just looking at what Carlos Hyde did to them gives me reason to be hopeful that some combination of Thomas Rawls and Christian Michael can be productive against that group. I mean, in theory, that's a good defense. They didn't show it last Monday night.
Right.
But those guys up front are supposed to be stout. So, you know, until they prove it, until they show it to me, then I'm going to lean with the offense, and the Seahawks have a better offense.
Right. I think flex is the right spot for both of those guys.
I would agree.
Depending on your league and your roster.
Both guys, I wouldn't play Christian Michael.
You're not playing Michael?
No,
why?
No. I mean, I'm keeping him on the roster, but I think that they love Thomas Rawls. I think that's quite apparent at this point. And, you know, justifiably so. Rawls is a really good player. I think he fits what their identity is, but
power run game.
Yeah. Yep. I think they'll still mix in Christian Michael and give him carries, like, but I don't think it's going to be close to a 50-50 split. And like Marcus said, this should theoretically be a good defense. I'm pretty much like all in on Rawls this week, I think.
Oh, yeah.
Interesting.
There you go. Fire it up.
Yeah.
In Indianapolis, a couple of concerning bits of news here. How about T.Y. Hilton misses Thursday's practice? Andrew Luck has had a sore right shoulder. We heard about this in the preseason. It showed up on the injury report in week one, and now it's showing up again here in week two. Again, it was a sore right shoulder, try to get that out, that hampered him early in the season last year as well. This is kind of bit of concerning news there in Indianapolis, no?
It's worrisome. I mean, T.Y. Hilton doesn't have is kind of the lesser of the two this week, in my opinion, for the matchup against Denver anyways. He doesn't slot as well against those guys, not being as big and physical as Dante Moncrief. But
I tell you what, man, I don't know how – if you have other options, I can't see myself playing T.Y. Hilton.
Really?
Nah, I just can't.
I don't know. I think this is a pretty classic, like –
on the road.
I could still see them putting up points, though. Like, this offense is going to throw, and they protected Andrew Luck pretty well in week one, much more than I expected. I get that, like, Von Miller and the boys are different than what Detroit offers, but they still have solid players at Detroit. I mean, Ezekiel Ansah is a really good pass rusher, and, you know, to the Colts' credit, like, they've invested a lot in this offensive line. Muhort's a good player.
Yep.
They drafted a first-round center this year. Anthony Costanzo had some rough moments, but he's a first-round pick.
Yep.
So, I mean, I don't know. I think that this is going to be fine. Like, You won't – I doubt you're going to be taking just complete slaps to the face with these Colts receivers.
All right, there you go. Again, and I know a lot of folks are asking me about Andrew Luck, if they've got other quarterbacks. I mean, because quarterback's so deep. A lot of folks are worried about playing Andrew Luck. And quite frankly, I don't know what to tell them. I mean, because I'm faced with that dilemma too, and I just can't hit that button where I take Andrew Luck out.
It's hard because we know what his ceiling is, and I think he put up like 20-some fantasy points against this team last year. Granted, that's last year, but he's got talented weapons, and he's an elite quarterback. So if they can protect him, as Harmon is hinting they might be able to a little better, then he should have a fine week.
We'll stay in this game. Demaryius Thomas says he's got a bad hip. He's going to try to play through it. He's been limited in practice all week. How worried are we about Demaryius Thomas?
I'm a little bit worried about Demaryius Thomas, but from my perspective, this means better things for Emmanuel Sanders. Because if nothing else, you've got Thomas that'll be out there as a decoy. I kind of expect you'll see a lot of the Broncos trying to match Sanders up on Antonio Cromartie because he did not have a good go of things. I got Harmon to snort over here just by saying that. he did not have a good go of things last week, and so I would think that if Thomas is going to be a decoy, then you'll see a lot of Sanders on Cromartie, and I think Manny eats.
So Ian Rappaport tweeted this morning, the Colts have already ruled out Henry Anderson, probably their best pass rusher, Vontae Davis, safety T.J. Green, and cornerback Patrick Robinson. So that defense is going to be in shambles again, and they allowed Matthew Stafford to dink and dunk all over them last week, which is what Trevor Siemian can do. We saw him be a capable passer in week one against the Carolina defense. So I like Manny Sanders this week, especially in PPR or on DFS.
I think C.J. Anderson's just going to go nuts.
Oh, yeah. I think he's in line for a big day. And the Broncos, I don't think they can just sit on the ball like they tried to do with Carolina.
Right.
Because the Colts are going to put up points. I mean, the Panthers are a good offense too, but, you know, this is certainly a situation where I think that they're going to have to score to keep up with the Colts, and I think Sanders will be the guy to do that through the air.
I mean, everyone's going to play Denver defense, but I love Denver defense this week too. Andrew Luck is the kind of guy that that will take – risks through the air. We've seen him turn the ball over a lot, and I think Denver at home against Andrew Luck, they're in line for a couple of turnovers, I think, no question about it. Jamal Charles still trying to work.
Officially doubtful, I saw in the injury report this morning, so he's not playing.
There's almost no way.
No.
There's almost no way he's playing. Spencer Ware fired up again. He's going to be a top 10 running back. I can almost guarantee you that. He looked awesome.
He looked great.
One man.
He looked great, and he looked great in the kind of game script we didn't think he would succeed in.
Yep.
I mean, the Chargers got out to a big lead early, and we thought that was going to take away the run game. So, no matter, he'll just get, 120-some-odd yards receiving and just roll along that way. That's fine.
Again, here in week two, I think the game script will be a little bit better for him. So, I wouldn't be surprised if he gets some early work, does some damage. And, again, as we mentioned, he's so good out of the backfield catching that ball. Man, Andy Reid, man. Andy Reid, he's been underrated in terms of developing talent at the running back position, but it doesn't matter who he gets. He can turn any running back into a legit top 10 guy. It's awesome.
Spencer Ware is another one of his, personal pet projects, like reclamation guys, somebody that they didn't catch on with in Seattle after taking him, I think, as a sixth-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he was he was booked in jail for a DUI, a case that was dismissed in 2014. So this is just another one of those Andy Reid, like, give me your week, you're troubled and all that, and I'll take them in and make them a star.
It's pretty cool.
Oh, hell yeah. It's
what he's
cool.
been able to do.
Yeah, it's way cool.
All right. It's time now for franchises. Fiery. Phoner, as Alex Gilhart is working.
Since we don't have a drop, can I just do – should yet? Since we don't have a drop yet, should I just do a manual drop?
Yes, absolutely. Please.
Franchise fiery phoning.
Wow, that was
that's pretty good.
That was something.
How do we're gonna clip that one off and just use that?
I'm just making drops.
We're just gonna use that.
I'm just making drops for this show left and right.
That was something.
We're just gonna use that. That's the one we're going with.
Are we just buying time right now for Gilhart?
We're pretty much we're just trying to.
Are we gonna
right
include
now,
any of this crap in the podcast?
Absolutely. Probably. It's probably gonna all be in it.
Oh, terrific. Absolutely. Well, listeners, should we talk about anything else while we're waiting?
Sure. By the way, you could find all of his pieces. We're talking about Matthew Franciszkiewicz at NFL.com/franchise. He does an opportunity report pretty much every week, right? He basically talks about how running backs, how they were utilized in week one, and he analyzes, in great detail, the opportunities laid out before a lot of running backs. And you, Matt Harmon, lay out basically what happens with the wide receiver position. So if you want to read those things, those are great. NFL.com/fantasy. I always forget to do this, but by the way, you can sign up today, NFL.com/Game Pass. Start a free 7-day trial. You can watch game replays during the regular season. It's awesome. NFL.com/Game Pass. We here in the Fantasy Stronghold use this ad nauseum during game day, but also after.
Checking it out last night, just trying to go back and watch some stuff. Didn't get a chance to watch the Packer-Jaguar game in depth, so I pulled up Game Pass and went to the condensed game, watched the whole thing in about half an hour, watched a little bit of Browns Eagles because I wanted to see if Carson Wentz was the real deal or not. So Game Pass helped me out there too.
All right, I tell you what. While we try to get franchise on the phone, we're gonna go to Matt Harmon here. You wrote Week 2 Next Gen Stats Analysis. If you haven't read this piece, I highly recommend it. It's a really, really good piece, and it's really interesting because Harmon uses Next Gen Stats to basically visualize how players were utilized, and it shows route trees and everything. It's a really, really cool thing. I'm not doing it justice by describing it, but go please check it out, NFL.com/Harmon. It's really, really cool. Maybe Matt Harmon, maybe if you can describe what it is that you write here.
Yeah, so Next Gen Stats, for anybody that doesn't know, is the NFL's own player tracking system that we've got going on here, and they have a chip in every single player, so it shows you. Obviously, you've all seen like the distance run. And
I believe it's in their shoulder pads, by the way. The
yeah,
players
right.
Themselves
well, okay. Sorry,
have not been total recalled or anything like that.
Yeah, no. It's in the shoulder pads or whatever. So you've seen like the speed stuff on television or like the distance run, but there's so much more to it, and this year we're trying to do more and more as an entire media group to push it forward. And one of the things that I've been doing is writing this matchups column. So it looks at, how receivers' route charts are utilized.
Right.
There are other metrics like time to throw.
Yep.
Pretty much you can get like heat maps of players, like where different cornerbacks line up. And I think that's one of the things that I've been using it for a lot is like, all right, so this cornerback is typically lining up on the left side of the field. How is that going to affect a wide receiver that is going to face him more often or players that move around? And, so it shows you just a lot of different stuff.
All right, so let's start with Chicago versus the Eagles. You like – I mean, first of all, a lot of folks like Alshon Jeffery and all of those things. But what did you see? What did the next-gen stats kind of tell you about this matchup upcoming, Alshon Jeffery and Kevin White versus Philadelphia?
Yeah, so starting with the Eagles defense, against Cleveland in week one, right cornerback Nolan Carroll gave up a ton of big plays. Robert Griffin III targeted Carroll 6 times in coverage, and Carroll allowed three receptions for 114 yards. Now, Eagles fans were quick to point out that one of those was offensive pass interference by Terrell Pryor, but
right.
My point was a big receiver mossed the hell out of this Carroll guy, and then also, Leotis McKelvin, who's their left cornerback, is going to miss this game with a hamstring injury, forcing seventh-round rookie Jalen Mills into the starting lineup. Alshon Jeffery and Kevin White, I think, are both in really good positions. Of course, we know Alshon's a stud. His next-gen stats route chart showed that he was targeted a ton down the field. I mean, incredibly high usage down the field. But one interesting thing to me, Kevin White, you know, we've known that he has struggled so far in preseason, and then that rolled over into week one where one of his incompletions called an interception. But he played more snaps and was targeted more than Alshon Jeffrey. And while that doesn't say anything negative about Jeffrey, what it says to me is that they trust him and they do want him to get more involved. And
isn't that interesting?
Yeah, and I think this is a good spot for him to try and do that. So
I agree.
I will certainly be paying attention to that.
All right, how about Stephon Diggs?
We have franchise. Like, what's happening right now?
You, like, vanished.
We were trying to roll on.
We had to go get it. We could have just stopped down for, like, 2 minutes.
I don't know. James kept going.
No, we keep going. That's
making
how we do it here.
Making it more awkward. No, we have to chop it up later.
This is – we're going. We're running live.
The show is the show.
Franchise is going to have to stay on hold while we get through Harmon's next-gen stat stuff. Sorry.
Franchise, are you there?
Franchise, you got to stay – Franchise, you got to stay on hold, pal. Stay on hold with me for, like, 5 minutes.
What is going on?
Wow.
Why don't we just do –
what? No worries. Do your thing.
It's easy. We're doing it live.
Oh, what the hell is going on?
Stephon Diggs versus the Packers. I'm rolling on. I don't care. Stephon Diggs had over 100 yards receiving. Is it a one-week wonder or no?
No, I think if you've been paying attention, Stephon Diggs is one of the breakout candidates this year. He had a great training camp with the Vikings. And one thing that was really illustrated his next-gen stats and something that we know that the Vikings wanted to do with him was move him around the formation a lot. You see him running a lot of outbreaking routes, a lot of routes from the slot. In fact, 27% of his routes came from the slot, where he took 4% tight to the line and 69% of his slot snaps out wide. So guy that's moving all around the formation, and I think that's interesting because that's going to put him in advantageous situations, especially against the Packers, who might have a really quietly emerging corner in Demarius Randle
is good.
Yeah, he played really well against Allen Robinson in week one.
He was one of my IDP sleepers coming into the
season. Ooh, look at you. Boy. Yeah, I mean, he was really strong against Robinson. Like I mentioned, he covered him on 13 of 27 pass plays per Next Gen Stats, and that was more than any other player on the Packers. And he only allowed one catch for 4 yards against Robinson. So could be a guy that we look
projecting
as an
nice things
player.
For Diggs, despite the fact that they have no quarterback, really?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think Diggs is the ultimate example that targets greater than quarterback play when projecting wide receivers. I mean, he owned a giant share of the Minnesota offense in week one and still played really well.
All right, this is the final one here, but LeGarrette Blount versus the Dolphins. I don't think a lot of folks are very comfortable playing LeGarrette Blount, but you say in your piece that he actually has top 10 potential. Is that right?
Oh, LeGarrette Blount, for one, has like an RB2 floor. Whenever the Patriots play in games where they're, you know, most likely to win the game and they play especially a lighter opponent, and I think that certainly qualifies in this game
for sure. The
Dolphins coming to Foxborough. By the way, the poor Dolphins, like, they had to travel to Seattle in week one and then to Foxborough in week two.
Yep.
That's rough. And I think one thing that Next Gen Stats kind of helps put an emphasis on and why he might have an even higher ceiling than just that floor that I illustrated, the Dolphins play a wide nine defense. They hired Jim Washburn to be their pass rush specialist coach this offseason. And if you look at the charts that I put on there, you see how wide that there's defensive ends align off the tackle box.
Right.
And I think that's just going to be a really big advantage for Blount, who already handled 22 carries in week one. I think they want
Which was
him,
surprising.
Yeah, I think they want him to be the offensive anchor while Tom Brady is out. And so I think he's going to have a ton of running lanes up in the middle of the field there. I think Blount is like a must play in DFS, and if you have him on the line in your season-long league, you want to play him this week. I love his upside.
I mean, I think they're going to try to avoid Ndamukong Suh, and you're just going to see a lot of runs off tackle. You're going to just see it. I mean, against that wide nine, that's how you attack it.
Yeah,
you got to just run off tackle, and I think the Patriots, they're brilliant about game planning. I think you're going to see a bunch of that. I don't disagree with that.
Miami also has a ton of like light linebackers. They're running out Kiko Alonso as their main linebacker right now. And Blount, when he gets to the second level, you know, Blount gets a bad rap for a lot of different reasons, but he's been a really good player whenever he's been with New England. And if he gets to the second level against those light linebackers and then into the secondary, I mean, forget about it. Like I said, I think he has top 10 upside.
Week 2, Next Gen Stats Analysis by Matt Harmon. You can go check it out, NFL.com/Harmon. All right. Now we can talk to the franchise. Franchise.
Franchise's fiery phone in.
What's up?
Hey, listen, man. You write this banger every single week. It's about running back opportunities. You can go check it out, NFL.com/franchise. Give me a running back you love this week.
All right, my lock-in RB1, it's kind of a chalky pick, but it's Lamar Miller versus Kansas City this week. Last week, Miller logged 32 touches, grinding away yardage against Chicago. It's pretty clear that the Texans want him to be a key player in their offense. Lamar Miller and D'Angelo Williams are the only running backs who logged over 30 touches and over 100 rushing yards in week one. I love this matchup for Miller against Kansas City because the Chiefs allowed 146 rushing yards to Chargers running backs last week between Melvin Gordon and Danny Woodhead combined, and they scored 3 red zone touchdowns. And all those red zone touches are going to go to Lamar Miller if the Texans get in close.
I love it.
Kansas City's linebacking core is in bad shape. They're without Josh Mauga for the entire season with a hip. Linebacker Justin Houston is out until at least November with a knee injury. And Tamba Ali, with a knee injury, played limited snaps in a rotation last week with Dee Ford and Frank Zombo, and it didn't really work out for them. Danny Woodhead, who's a guy we know more for his pass-catching prowess than his rushing ability, actually ate up huge chunks of field with 80 rushing yards on 14 attempts against the Chiefs last year out of the shotgun formation. Miller had 31 snaps out of shotgun last week against Chicago with 12 carries for 54 yards and 1 reception for 6 yards. So all that red zone work is going to go to Miller. He's not going to be splitting with anyone. He already had 32 touches in that first game. He's going to have a huge workload. And I love him as an RB1 this week.
What you're telling me is Lamar Miller is good. Kansas City is in trouble. I like it. Give me a running back that you don't like this week based off of opportunities and touches.
Okay. The guy that I'm calling my worst play this week is DeMarco Murray of the Titans.
Ooh.
Yep. So everyone thinks, you know, he had a great fantasy game because he scored 2 receiving touchdowns.
Right.
That's great. That's fine. He averaged 3.2 yards per carry on his 13 rush attempts, which is pretty bad. It's basically the DeMarco Murray we saw last year in Philadelphia. I put him in my trade calls column earlier this week to try to sell high on because I don't think his value will ever be as blown up as it is now coming off those 2 touchdowns. I expect Jim Bob Cooter and Matt Stafford to attack the Titans secondary early in this game. That Titans secondary, as you guys were talking about earlier with Stephon Diggs, they allowed Sean Hill to throw for 236 yards. You know, the Vikings defense won that game for them, but
yeah.
That's kind of telling as to what the Titans secondary is looking like. And I think once the Lions get up in this game, they won't be able to use Murray as much. And plus, there's Derrick Henry back there who only had 7 touches last week. They need to get him more involved. He gained 41 receiving yards on his 2 receptions and was just making things happen.
He looks good out there.
Can I ask two questions here? Well, one, I want to say, Franchise, I miss you. It's only been one day, but you not being here today has been tough. Your desk is empty and sad.
Would you say you haven't eaten in weeks?
Even though he's only been gone one day, I haven't eaten in weeks.
Nice.
Second question, what are you doing on your day off?
Had to go to the bank this morning.
This is good podcast stuff now.
Real people stuff, you know, taking care of the dog and, you know, grinding out stats for the podcast.
All right, super boring. Was looking for some, like, no pants, you know, Doritos stories, but we'll get to those later on the Feelings podcast. I wanted to ask you seriously about the Titans running backs, though. So you would say that you're thinking that Derrick Henry is going to be the guy that's out on passing downs, which would be accurate. From week one, he played more passing plays actually than running plays, because I would say like he has to be in order for DeMarco Murray to disappoint, because the Lions are probably going to get up early.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. Like, I think the Lions are going to come out to a lead. DeMarco Murray's not going to get. I don't think he's going to get those chances as a rusher. He did have 5 receptions last week for 35 yards, but. I think they just need, like, if the Titans want to win, they need to get Derrick Henry involved. He's just a better playmaker than Murray. Murray might be the lead back, the veteran presence there, but Henry can make magic things happen. So,
give me a sleeper running back you like.
All right, my sleeper is going to be Giovanni Bernard this week against the Pittsburgh Steelers.
Oh, yeah. Here we go.
the Bengals come into Heinz Field this week. I think they are going to want to control the clock and try to keep the ball away from Big Ben. Antonio Brown and D'Angelo Williams, who all went off last week against Washington. So in order to control the clock, they're going to need to feed their running backs and have them be efficient, which they were not last week, especially in third down situations, which calls for Geo touches. Last week, Geo had just 7 total touches against the Jets. He was good on his rush attempts. He averaged 5 yards per carry on his 5 rushes, but the Jets did a good job of bottling him up as a pass catcher. He only had 2 catches for 5 yards. And obviously, Cincinnati took advantage of A.J. Green's matchup with Revis last week. But I think they'll need to be more creative against the Steelers if they want to keep up with that high-flying offense. So I like Gio Bernard to bounce back here. We're talking about a guy who's compiled 1,200 yards from scrimmage in 2 of the last 3 seasons and over 1,000 yards from scrimmage in the other. He only had 30 total yards last week. He's an extreme value play in DFS.
I like it.
Especially if it's a PPR scoring format.
Atta baby. There you go. All right, it's franchises. Fiery Phoner.
You guys want my fire take?
Yeah, fire take.
My fire take is that Alfred Morris gets revenge on the Redskins.
Revenge!
He came in the game last week after he couldn't do anything. He averaged 5 yards per carry. I think they're going to give Freddie Moe a chance to get some red zone touches and maybe get in the end zone. So
I like it.
I like Mo to get his revenge on his old team.
By the way, we're firing up Danger Zone after the podcast today with me and Adam Rank, and based off of that, I am throwing Freddie Mo into the Danger Zone.
Uh-oh.
Oh, yeah.
I like it. It's Franchise's Fiery Phoner, ladies and gentlemen. Franchise, enjoy your day off, pal.
We'll see you Sunday, man.
Thanks, guys.
Bye. Miss you.
All right, let's get to Fantasy Audibles. Gelhar, what is Fantasy Audibles?
Oh, God, man, we're really doing this. It's a thing where we use, it's from SAP, we use a player comparison tool. It doesn't really work, but I pick I pick lineup decisions for people. But this tool is still not fully operational yet. So
I am a big fan of the Death Star.
Mark, much like the Death Star, it's not fully operational.
Not fully operational.
Oh, I'm a big fan of in the column when you lead off with the player comparison tool is this, 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 and this, this, but doesn't work yet. So we're not even going to talk about that anymore. Let's actually talk about real things.
I love it.
But I just picked lineup decisions, and this week the ones we focused on were Aaron Rodgers or Derek Carr.
Okay.
Spencer Ware or T.J. Yeldon,
yeah.
Colby Fleener or Dwayne Allen,
all right,
and then another wide receiver one I forgot already, but you can read it at NFL.com/Gelhar.
All right, there you go. So let me ask you about your first one. Aaron Rodgers versus Derek Carr. Why that?
Why that?
Yeah.
Well, Aaron Rodgers is a tough matchup this week going on the road the opening day of this new Viking stadium against Mike Zimmer, who of all the defensive coordinators he faced is one of the ones that's consistently gotten his goat. I tweeted out this picture, and it's in the article as well, but Rodgers averages 40 less yards per game and a whole half a touchdown less per game when he plays Mike Zimmer than his other career averages. So with Jordy Nelson still not fully back, the offense was, you know, it's loaded with playmakers, but Harmon noted in his next-gen matchups column too, they're still relying on Aaron Rodgers to street ball a little bit to get them around. You could paint a scenario where you bench Rodgers for somebody with a better matchup. I think I have him ranked lower than guys like Matthew Stafford this weekend, for example.
Okay.
But we know Rodgers' ceiling is enormous.
Yeah.
He could go off for 6 touchdowns in a bad matchup any day, especially if this is the game where Jordy Nelson comes back. What's concerning for the Vikings is Xavier Rhodes is likely to be out, their number one corner, which means they're going to be starting Trey Waynes, who kind of got worked last week. I was trying to get some next-gen stats nuggets before the podcast on this, but did not get them out in time. Oh, actually, wait. They just hit my inbox, so let's see.
So here we go. Breaking news.
Breaking news. Trey Waynes last week only allowed a 58.3% completion percentage, but that was the Titans and not Aaron Rodgers.
Right.
Overall,
he's a pretty good player.
He's a talented guy, but he hasn't quite delivered on his first-round billing yet.
Yeah,
but,
I hear you.
So that's the situation. I said at the end I would still end up starting Rodgers over Carr just because of him being Aaron Rodgers.
But what do you like about – I mean, you must really like Carr.
Well, Carr's got a good matchup. Atlanta really can't rush the passer. They barely touched Winston in week one. They only had 19 sacks last season. Carr was able to stay clean against New Orleans. He only was hit 3 times, wasn't sacked once, and put up big numbers. So if you take away a couple, you know, the random 75-yard Jalen Richard touchdown, that could even lead to more opportunities for him. And Amari Cooper's in a good spot, as Harmon also noted in his column. And it's just a good opportunity for Carr to be able to go out there and put up solid QB1 numbers again.
Spencer Ware or T.J. Yeldon?
Choose wisely.
It's Spencer Ware, guys. We already basically kind of hinted at this, I think, off the top, and it's just Spencer Ware.
Okay, but what do you like about T.J. Yeldon's matchup? I mean, here's the thing. I know that when you put Spencer Ware there, you're already saying, okay, the bar's high. But you're saying you like T.J. Yeldon this week as well. Why?
Well, Chris Ivory's officially been ruled out.
Right.
The San Diego defense gave up 13 catches on 14 targets for 153 yards to Kansas City last week. Yeldon, as we mentioned off the top, is a good pass-catching back. And if this game turns into a shootout, which we think it could, Prince Amukamara has also been ruled out, so the Jaguars, the secondary, is not going to be as tight as it was in week one against the Packers.
Right.
Could turn into a game where they're trading blows and Yeldon could see a ton of work.
All right, there you go. Be sure to check it out. Fantasy Audibles, NFL.com/Gelhar. All right, let's talk about some potential shootouts very quickly. You put Cincinnati at Pittsburgh here. You know, it's interesting, Gelhar. I think this is going to be a low-scoring affair.
It probably could be, but A.J. Green and Antonio Brown, and you never know with division rivals.
Yeah. All right, there you go.
Green has a hell of a good history against the Steelers the last several years, and especially he's worked them over. There's so much talent on the offensive side. A sneaky player to watch in this game is Jesse James, who played 100% of the snaps.
Saw a lot of targets last week.
At tight end, yeah. He caught 5 for 31, I think, but he was used heavily in the red zone, had 2 targets inside the 10-yard line. If you're a Gronk owner, if you're looking to just kind of fiddle around with tight ends, I think Jesse James could be a really good player in this matchup. Heath Miller had 10 catches in both games against the Bengals last year.
Interesting. All right, how about D'Angelo Williams? I mean, he came out just firing in week one. Does he do it again in week two?
I think so. I mean, at this point, it's hard for me to doubt D'Angelo Williams with what we've seen. And you know, I know Harmon tweeted last week during the Steelers game that it's been fun to watch this late career
resurgence,
explosion, whatever you want to call it, from D'Angelo Williams. And he's kind of become one of these guys for me that as long as he's the starter and is getting the bulk of the carries, I have a hard time coming up with a reason to not put him in my lineup.
No, I don't think there's any reason for you to take Williams out of your lineup. He's playing, I mean, just incredible. And I think the way that Carolina just used those two backs like just so terribly when they were together, I think that actually kind of preserved him, and now this is why he's having this late career surge with Pittsburgh.
Isn't that interesting? He's also such a – he's older for a running back, too.
He's the oldest running back in the NFL.
At 33.
I know. No, I know. But, again, it's like –
No, I only say that just because, you know, I was reading recently about the trend of the NFL getting younger as a whole.
Yeah.
And the fact that 33 is now the oldest running back in the NFL. When before, you'd always have a guy who's like 35, 36, still kicking around.
Oh, yeah. Fred Taylor, like, tearing up the league at, like, 36 a few years ago.
Right.
Or something.
Yep. Right.
It's true.
And Matt Forte went off for about 4.3 yards per carry. Not went off against the Bengals, but he had a solid showing. They have a great defensive line, but without Vontaze Burfict still, who I believe is still on suspension, that hurts their front seven. So D'Angelo Williams should be a solid play again.
All right, Andy Dalton, Ben Roethlisberger, who do you like more?
Dalton.
Ooh, Dalton, that's spicy.
I think I like Dalton a little bit more.
This game is in Pittsburgh, right?
It is.
Correct.
Yeah, then I like Ben because he has kind of actually pretty troubling home and away splits where he struggled
Isn't
really.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah, it's quite strange. He struggled.
Doesn't make sense.
Or like put up fine numbers away from home
but
in his
at
career.
Home, he's elite.
Yeah, I mean, I just think he and Brown right now are just on another level. I think the fact that they have had guys like Jesse James and Eli Rogers step up with the other players being hurt, I think that only helps Ben's cause.
By the way, Marcus Wheaton expected to play in this game as well. All right, New Orleans.
No one cares.
Don't care.
I know. I just threw it in. New Orleans at the Giants. Breeze on the road. Eli Manning last year just went bonkers. I guess both quarterbacks went bonkers last year in this matchup. Who do you like? I mean, you're going to like everybody, but, you know, what stats, what trends, what are you looking at in this game?
I think you'll see both quarterbacks have pretty good games. I'm not going to go out and say that they're going to combine for 13 touchdown passes again, but I do think they're going to.
But it could happen.
It certainly could happen.
I mean, that's the crazy thing. It could totally happen.
It could absolutely
again.
Happen. I think Eli has a better game than Drew Brees. One, because you know, you talk about home road splits for Ben Roethlisberger. The home road splits for Drew Brees generally have been pretty stark as well.
Oh, yeah.
So you've got Brees on the road. against a Giants defense that looks improved. Now, I know last week they were playing a rookie quarterback and a rookie running back, so you know, maybe you take that with a grain of salt. But just watching that game and going back and watching it on Game Pass,
shameless
plug right there, this unit looks a lot better, and it really starts up front, having guys like Olivier Vernon be able to get after the quarterback, having you know Damon Harrison right there as a kind of a gap filler in the middle. I think Breeze puts up good numbers, but I think the Saints may be chasing pretty much the whole game.
How about Rashad Jennings in this matchup?
Love him.
Yeah, I mean, I think you got to love him. The Saints really gave it up to every running back but Latavius Murray in week one against the Raiders. But I think there's, you know, no way that Jennings doesn't see feature back touches. It was pretty much him and Vereen in week one, and
I think
he still saw 19 touches out of the backfield. So I really like Jennings this week. I like pretty much everybody on the Giants. You mentioned the Breeze home and away splits. I just wanted to actually put some numbers to that.
Okay.
He averages 30 points. Fantasy points per game at home the last 3 years from 2013, 14, and 15, and only 21 on the road. You know, that's not a drastic drop-off, but it's a pretty substantial drop-off. He averages 341 passing yards at home, 295 passing yards on the road. Also, it's kind of forecasted to rain a little bit in New York or in New Jersey on this game day. So
good catch.
Be aware of that. You know, that could be a situation where, again, the Saints playing outside, away from the dome, in the rain, not something they're used to. I don't know. I don't really have a good feeling on the Saints because I could see it being kind of a trap game on New Orleans' side. But for the Giants, I still – think pretty much toss everybody out there. The Saints are missing their top cornerback, Delvin Bro.
Right.
They're playing guys like C.O. Moore, or not even Sterling Moore. I don't even know who the guy's name is.
They just signed somebody off the street.
I think it was him. They signed Sterling Moore. They signed another player recently, and they're playing a bunch of like undrafted and rookie players. Ugh. Their secondary is just a mess at the corner position. I think Sterling Shepard, Odell Beckham is in for a nuclear game.
How about Victor Cruz?
I think Cruz is worth looking at. I mean, he certainly was a big part of the offense. They played almost exclusively in the three receiver set
right.
on week one, and I think that's something we should expect to continue. There's no reason that Victor Cruz can't be a big part of this offense if he's healthy.
All right, San Diego taking on Jacksonville. Gilhar, what do you like in this matchup?
I think Woodhead's going to be a great play in this matchup, especially if it turns into a shootout. He outsnapped and outrushed Melvin Gordon in the second half as Kansas City was trying to claw their way back into it. I'm not afraid of starting Gordon either, but I just think Woodhead's going to be a great play.
I like them both.
As far as the wide receivers for San Diego go, I'm not trusting any of them yet this week.
Nope.
I don't want to see how the target distribution shakes out with Travis Benjamin and Tyrell Williams and Dontrell Inman and stuff, but I think Woodhead and Gates are both great plays on the San Diego side.
You know, I went last night just out of curiosity and looked up some old Tyrell Williams film, which, by the way, not easy to find.
No,
Western Oregon.
Western Oregon.
You know, I saw some Western Oregon highlights, and he literally looked like a man playing with you know high school kids out there. You know, the juggernauts like the South Dakota School of Mines and Technology. you know, they don't really offer a whole lot. But I did go back and actually watch some of his preseason tape from last year with the Chargers, and he's fast, he's big. Beyond that, there's still a lot of work to do. So I know that he's kind of the next guy in line there in San Diego. He's the next guy to get an opportunity. But I still think he is a ways away from being a consistently productive.
So what I read from the San Diego Union Tribune, and I would agree with this, from what I've seen of – and again, I know, I went back to some of that Western Oregon stuff too. But big, strong guy, or fast guy too, but he doesn't play strong. And he's lets the ball come into him. Mm-hmm. And in the NFL, that just doesn't work, especially given his size. He's got to go attack that ball. Now, from the San Diego Union Tribune, what they said was that they're working with him on that exact thing, is that they're trying to get him to attack the ball in the air, and that's what he's got to get done. So he knows that's what he needs to work on. The coaching staff knows that's what he needs to work on. So we'll see if it actually makes an impact here in week two.
Here's how I would look at this wide receiver group. I think Travis Benjamin obviously becomes kind of the de facto number one, and we saw what that looks like last year in Cleveland. I think he can have a very similar season where he has some pretty usable weeks. You try to pick and guess those. I think he is more than a deep threat. I think he can run some pretty good routes, especially underneath the slants and everything like that, which is important. That's what San Diego wants to do.
Right.
Tyrell Williams, great upside, I think. You know, he's the one that, like, if anything clicked, he would become the guy that we are most interested in. He also fits a type. Adam Rank wrote about this for his sleepers column this week, that he really just fits exactly what they kind of look for in these unheralded receivers.
Malcolm Floyd, Vincent Jan, it doesn't matter.
Denario Alexander.
Denario, like, that's right. That's right, I forgot about him.
But don't sleep on Dontrell Inman, who actually played the most snaps after Keenan Allen went down. He led the team in slot snaps with 68% run from there. I wouldn't be surprised if he has several, like, 5 to 7 catch games, just because somebody's going to have to catch the football.
That's a very good point. A-Rob should just go bazonkers in this game as well. I know Jason Verrett's a very good player, but, I mean, San Diego in general is just – their defense is struggling.
He was in the next-gen stats column, too. I looked at how they performed against each other dating back to last year when the Chargers and Jaguars faced off. Several of his downfield routes that Bortles just missed on, you can see that in his next-gen stats route chart, too. I mean, he led the NFL in targets, 15,
That's
in
insane.
Week one,
right.
You know, which kind of puts to bed any of those thoughts that, like, well, if the Jags are better, you know, he might not get the football as much.
I have zero worries about
No.
him.
Yeah, none. Zero. I think he's in another one of these guys. I mentioned this to Gelhar this morning. I tweeted it out, like, of our consensus, like, top 8 ranked receivers, which includes Robinson, all of these guys could just absolutely go ham this week.
That's a very good point.
Robinson was honestly, like, 12 inches from having a just monstrous game against the Packers.
Yeah, agreed.
Bortles missed him on one touchdown, and then there was the one that Ha-Ha Clinton Dix knocked out of his hands that he could have maybe gotten in if Clinton Dix hadn't made that play. But
his Robinson's numbers were not an issue, not a factor of not getting targets. They just didn't connect. That's all.
Yeah, and Verrett is a really good corner. Actually, ironically, like I said, they played each other last year like this, so they have experience against each other. But, you know, he's the type of corner that, like, he'll shadow guys across the field, but teams can do things to get them away from the number one cornerback. They lined Robinson up in the slot on 27% of his snaps in week one, so look for them to do that in this spot.
Atlanta taking on Oakland at Oakland. Amari Cooper, Julio Jones, fire them all up, I'm assuming. What do we make of this backfield, though?
God. It's kind of like Marcus said in our last podcast, like, with Devonta Freeman, you probably just spent a second round pick on a flex play. Sorry about your luck.
Basically, I wouldn't take it to the bank that Coleman's going to outwork Freeman in the passing game. I don't know. I'm so fascinated to watch this game and see how the backfield split looks in this one. But either of those guys, they can't be anything more than a flex for you.
It's so weird that Tevin Coleman was getting so much work in the passing game we've seen what Devonta Freeman can do out of the backfield catching balls. But, man, that's weird. And again, it's one of those things where if Tevin Coleman is using up a lot of that passing work, the floor for Freeman gets pretty low. Latavius Murray, look, I know he's been kind of maligned here.
Persona non grata.
Yeah, a little bit. But you know what? I've been a big Latavius Murray supporter because of the offensive line. I like the offense in general. I think he's developing as a talent himself. So I like him in this game. I know that the big runs for Oakland went to other guys last week. But, again, you know, it's just a matter of, like, opportunity. And for me, I think they're trying to give Latavius Murray the ball. I really like him in this matchup.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me. Like, I don't think that the Falcons have a very good defense, so I think this game is another one that could absolutely be a shootout. I expect Amari Cooper to just go off in this game. Desmond Trufant is the Falcons' best corner, but he played all but 2 of his snaps at left cornerback, and Cooper moves around the formation, as does Crabtree, so I expect them to just pick on the other side of the field, which is exactly what the Buccaneers did with Mike Evans.
Tennessee taking out Detroit. Detroit's offense looked great. Are they going to have another big game here against Tennessee?
I think it'll be muted a little bit. I do think, though, they have found something with Jim Bob Cooter's offense.
Oh, yeah.
And I do think I do think not having Calvin Johnson makes Matt Stafford a better quarterback because it forces him to spread the ball around a little
bit
more.
Isn't that weird?
I mean, we saw Marvin Jones quietly put together a pretty nice game. Golden Tate had a lot of targets.
Yep.
Obviously, the two big headlines were Theo Riddick and Amir Abdullah in that one. Even Eric Ebron had a nice day. So, in some ways, my fear maybe is that this turns into the Saints offense where you can never completely predict anything, but I think it's good news for Matt Stafford and his ability to not only be productive, but also maybe take care of the football a little bit more.
Isn't that weird? I totally 100% agree with you. I thought Matt Stafford actually looked really good. I mean, I get it. The Colts defense is
not
Barbo.
Good.
But I thought what Matt Stafford was doing in terms of decision-making and the way he played, I liked what I saw out there.
I think we talked about this on the last podcast. Like, they have really dialed out that YOLO ball tendency in Stafford's game, and he was he had the lowest average depth of aim throw among any starting quarterback in week one. That's exactly what they wanted to be. This is a crazy stat that Marvin Jones was the only player that Matthew Stafford threw an incompletion to last week.
Right. I was going to say that. I think we mentioned it a little bit in the last pod, but every other receiver caught 100% of his targets.
That's crazy.
It's like Golden Tate was only average being like, what, 1.5 yards?
1.3. That was going to make that point, too.
1.3 yards.
Marvin Jones led the team in targets with 10. Okay. He only caught 4 for 85. His average depth of target was 12.6. The next highest was Eric Ebron at 6.8, I think. So, obviously, the running backs had a low one. Golden Tate, as you mentioned, 1.3. Anquan Boldin, 2. So, I mean, we know Jones is going to be the big play boundary receiver, and I think this is a spot where he could just have a little bit of, you know, positive regression, and he's still going to lead the team in targets, be the downfield guy, and this one he connects a little bit more. So I'm still totally all in on Jones.
I'm super all in on Marvin Jones. All right, worrisome matchups here. Dallas at Washington. I think some folks, Gelhar, might think this could be a shootout. What say you?
I don't know. Like, Harmon hit this one on the head last week with Dallas wanting to slow the game down against opponents. I don't think that's going to be just the New York Giants. They ran like 75 plays in week one. They're going to try and control the clock. I think Zeke's in a good spot, but, you know, I have worries about that Washington offense, too. Kirk Cousins was scattershot in week one. He was missing players. He should have hit. He looked kind of a little scared, skittish in the pocket and stuff. So I don't. There's just so many questions around this with the Washington offense. What the hell's going on in their backfield? Is Dez Bryant going to get targets this week? Is Cole Beasley going to get 12 targets again? Like, I don't
know. Deshaun looked fine.
Aside, Deshaun looked good. Deshaun looked very good. I think he could be in a solid play this week, as is Jordan Reed. But outside of those two and Zeke, I mean, I don't know about anybody else. I'm not trusting a lot in this matchup.
Ezekiel Elliott just 2.5 yards per carry last week, which was very surprising. Does he bounce back?
I think so. I just wanted to make one point on Jordan Reed.
Oh, please.
Because we talked about last week, like you said, Dallas slowed the game down. They've done that to Odell Beckham twice last year and again this year. That's the same thing they've done to a player like Jordan Reed, too, with that slowed down pace. Reed averaged 19.45 PPR fantasy points per game in the 12 games he played last year that wasn't facing Dallas. In two games versus Dallas, 7.4 points and 39 receiving yards compared to 72 yards per game.
7.4 PPR points?
Yes.
Oh, my God.
In his two games against Dallas last year, and 39 yards per game against Dallas as opposed to 72 against everybody else. So, I mean, that's one of those things that, like, it could just totally reverse. But I think because there's a plausible explanation to it in that Dallas limits the opportunities of their opponent, they slow the game down, something to be aware of with Reed. But I, like you mentioned with Ezekiel Elliott, I really like him a lot this week. He got the work. The Giants defense, I think we can definitely say, underrated, stopped him really well. Yep. And D'Angelo Williams took the Washington defense to the woodshed in week one.
Yep.
Dez Bryant, I think, still just, I don't know. I got to think that their game plan is going to involve more Dez Bryant this week.
They even came out and said they're, I mean, that could be a smokescreen, but they're like, we're not going to force it to Dez.
It doesn't make sense to me.
If I am a Dez owner, I am definitely Deke shrieking at that one. For God's sakes. Ugh. And just as a person that likes good football players to be used good, right.
If I may steal from Matt Harmon here.
Okay, please.
Just throw it to your good players.
It doesn't have to be that hard, bro.
It's not that hard.
I mean, how many? So Jason Witten had, what, 15 targets?
14.
14
Cole
targets? That's unreal.
Just
unreal.
Throw it to your good players.
It doesn't make sense to me.
I feel like we're going to be doing this all year.
Look,
cut this segment, replay it.
I know. Look, the thing is, too, Dak Prescott, he's doing what you want young quarterbacks to do. Throw it to your wide-open guys. And he's making the reads. He's seeing that Dez is being double-covered. Okay, I'm going to check it down. But at some point in the NFL, man, you just got to throw it to the guy. If anything, just to keep the defense honest. But, man, it was painful how little Dez was utilized in that game. All right, jumping ahead, Tampa Bay, Arizona. Jameis Winston had 4 touchdowns last week. This is much stiffer competition here for Jameis Winston. Expectations for him. Are you worried against this very, good Cardinals defense that I imagine they're going to be in desperation mode here. They can't go 0-2, not if they're thinking, hey, we want to get to the Super Bowl.
Yeah, I'm a little bit concerned about Jameis this week. And, you know, going on the road there in the desert and playing that Cardinals team after a tough loss in week one, you know, this is not going to be like carving up the Falcons. I will say, if there's one guy that I kind of have my eye on, and this is definitely a sleeper play, it's ASJ. And that's because the Cardinals, historically, in the last few years, have really struggled to cover the tight end position. And Seferian Jenkins, for whatever issues he has about being a head case and everything, is still a super athletic, talented guy. I mean, we saw it. Granted, he had one catch, but it was a heck of a catch. That 30-yard touchdown he caught from Jameis Winston was, man. So, you know, look, it is definitely a kind of a YOLO play. But I think if there's one guy to keep an eye on, he's one of the ones.
All right, so Larry Fitzgerald continues to impress. Does he do it again here against Tampa Bay?
Sure. I don't know. that pass-catching core is hard to predict. The one thing I will say about being concerned about Jameis, too, and these are good numbers, the average depth of aim throw we've talked about a few times from PFF, is Jimmy Garoppolo was able to like find success against the Cardinals, but he never challenged them deep. He averaged 6.8 yards per aim throw.
I think the only one was probably the Chris Hogan touchdown.
On a blown coverage. Yeah.
Jameis is a guy that in that offense throws the ball downfield. He averaged 10.4 yards per aim throw, which was tied fourth highest in the league last week. That concerns me, especially if Mike Evans gets the Patrick Peterson treatment and like – is Vincent Jackson officially washed? He had like 2 for 21 last week, which I feel is his like mainstay stat line these days.
I was gonna say, even if he's washed though, which he certainly might be. I think we talked about that a lot this preseason. This is a really good matchup for him.
Not bad.
If Peterson is tied up with Evans all day, and those two are going at it, and you know Jackson gets this Brandon Williams character, or even Justin Bethel, if he comes back, he's nursing an upper body injury. I like Jackson in this spot.
For
DFS, something like that. I don't know if you have the stones to start him in a season long.
Right.
Or if you just don't have better options, but I definitely like him as a dart throw in DFS.
All right, there you go. Let's talk about some interesting matchups here. San Francisco taking on Carolina at Carolina. I know C.J. Anderson had a great game against Carolina, but this is a different style of running attack. Expectations for Carlos Hyde?
Not good.
Yeah, I'm not
great, Bob.
Yeah. Not great, Bob.
And I think part of it because the Panthers got carved up by C.J. Anderson last week. This is a very prideful defense, a very good defense. And, I mean, you talk about Arizona being kind of on the hot seat, and I think the Panthers are the same way. I mean, they do not want to start 0-2, especially losing at home to San Francisco. I think their plan will be to limit Carlos Hyde and see if Blaine Gabbert and his grab bag of receivers can
Jeremy Curley, baby.
Jeremy Curley, Quentin. By the way, Quentin Patton, just as an aside, you chirp a lot for a dude who's Quentin Patton. I mean, that's what I noticed last week. Like, every 7-yard catch, he was, like, chirping and pointing. I'm like, you're Quentin Patton. Let's just calm the heck down.
Yeah,
all right?
You're beating the Rams, buddy.
One thing, I want to give a shout-out to our new hire here in the fantasy team, especially on Fantasy Live and stuff, Cynthia Freeland. We have her doing a column each week with her analytics and stats called 15 Must-Read Stats for each week. And I thought this was an interesting nugget from her column. The 49ers had 144 rush yards between the tackles in week one, which is more than they had in any game in 2015. The Panthers allowed 5.7 yards per rush between the tackles last week, which is the third worst total in the NFL. That's where, you know, a lot of Carlos Hyde's work came. We saw him showing great patience and vision in there. So it could, you know, I'm not going to totally jump off ship with him. The 49ers are big dogs in this game. You know, it's Carolina. They're at home. So that worries me. But there could be, you know, you could stand a reason to still trot out Carlos Hyde in the flex, depending on your roster.
I think, with that guy in that offense, you almost have to play him at least in the flex.
Yeah, I mean, I would break ties. I don't like playing running backs in my flex, anyways, but that's a whole other discussion.
I'd say depending on the league.
Yeah, but I mean, I would just try to break ties in favor of getting Carlos Hyde out of your lineup because I think the Panthers are gonna whoop the 49ers. And well, I mean, not really because they're gonna go 0-16, but. I'm being serious for a second. I think they're going to whoop the 49ers.
Yeah.
They looked, you know, at good. They looked good at times on Monday night, but on other drives, they certainly looked like the mess of an offense that we expected. I just really don't think there's going to be a situation where he can rack up, you know, 15-plus carries in this game. And Sean Drawn was still rolling out there. I could see him coming out on passing downs in a catch-up game script. So
yeah, he had 7 rush attempts, too.
I don't, man. Yeah, I gotta be honest. I don't know if I agree with that, because I think no matter what, Chip Kelly's gonna get the running backs the ball. It's just, what is he gonna do? He's gonna get 15 carries. It's just, what is he gonna do with those 15 carries? Yeah. It doesn't. They could be down 40 to nothing. Chip Kelly is still gonna be giving the ball to his running backs. It's just, that's just how his offense works. But again, will he be effective with 15 touches?
On the flip side, the other running back, can I cape up from a boy here real quick? Jay Stu? He's got an ankle injury.
Yep.
He's questionable on
he's
the
been
thing.
He's limited all week.
Expected to play. It's kind of the veteran little nick-up thing. Mm-hmm. He is so much more productive in games where the Carolina Panthers are heavy favorites, and this is the type of game script where Stewart see, like, 20, 25 carries and rack up a good amount of yardage and – you know, God willing, even find his way into the end zone. So if you have Jay Stu and you got burned last week, I think this is a week two.
I was going to say, so this week he'll get 8 points instead of 6.
I hate all of you.
I love Jonathan Stewart, but it is pretty funny to bust you about this.
Baltimore taking on Cleveland. Joe Flacco, is he streamable?
Stream both quarterbacks.
Oh, yeah.
Stream,
yeah.
To be honest.
Oh, yeah.
I'm starting both in various leagues.
Come on.
Well, especially leagues where I had Tyrod and I didn't start him because I thought they were going to get smoked. Or leagues where I had Phillip Rivers. I picked up Joe Flacco just in case because I like that upside as opposed to what might happen with Phillip.
But wait, why Josh? Come on. Not Josh McCown. You're not firing
that's
it.
That's in a 2QB league, and Harmon looks like he's ready to fire off some takes, so I'll let him take the floor here.
I mean, he went for over 400 yards in the first meeting with Baltimore last year, and, I mean, he had a serviceable contest over 250 yards in the second game against Baltimore. And listen, that Gary Barnage and he have a connection. We talked about the much more productive stat line Barnage posted with McCown under center. They have better weapons this year with McCown out there than they did last year. I mean, I get it. It's the Browns. But, like, I mean, this is a situation where I think both of these teams, these pass games could go off. They're trading points back and forth. And I'm telling you.
So wait, you're saying just because he's Josh McCown, it doesn't matter for fantasy.
But it does matter for fantasy. Oh, my God. That's such an embarrassing drop.
I love it.
It's such a great drop. I absolutely love it. All right, Indianapolis taking on Denver. We talked about this a little bit. I know
Go real quick. Again,
please.
I think we talked about it a little bit in waiver wire pickups, but along with Flacco, Pitta, I think, is a great streaming tight end. There's so many question marks across the position. He played the most snaps, saw the most targets of all those tight ends there. They still, I don't know if they're going to throw 9 to Steve Smith again or whatever, but if this turns into a back-and-forth game, we know Flacco has relied on Pitta in the past, so I think he's a good streaming option this week.
Absolutely. I'm going to be starting him in a few spots, definitely playing him in DFS, recommending him as a play there. And, you know, quite frankly, like, I just don't want to touch any of this wide receiver business. I know everybody's like, hey, Mike Wallace could be a sneaky play just because he caught a touchdown, but he was as much mired in that committee as everybody else. Like, just because somebody scored a touchdown one week doesn't mean he's more important than the other guys.
You and Franchise have a beverage wager on this, do you not?
We do have a beer bet. I said that he is going to record less than 50 yards on Sunday, and Franchise says he will score over.
Yeah, you could potentially lose that wager with one throw.
Well, that's how he's going to
Don't care.
No, but, I mean,
No.
That's the only way he's going to lose.
Yeah, it's not happening.
I mean, that's how.
Oh, no, it's not going to be. Mike Wallace is not going to give you, you know, 12 for 73. Like,
right, that's what I'm saying. You know? He's either going.
It'll be like a 2 for 80 sort of deal.
Right.
I mean, I realize it's a little bit of a risk, but my point in just in all this is it's just crazy. Like, everybody's all hyped up on Mike Wallace because he caught one long pass. Like, this is what Mike
Wallace does.
He's either going to
go. He's not the number one receiver now. I'm looking at you, Gelhar. Stop looking at me.
I wasn't saying anything.
He's either going to go. You're staring at me. It's making me uncomfortable.
I was just zoning out for a second. God. Sorry I wasn't stalking an ex-girlfriend on Facebook.
Wow. Oh, my God. That was so
unnecessary. Whoa.
I quit.
The podcast has come to a stop. Holy cow.
Anyways, next matchup.
Wow, Colts Broncos. How do I even transition?
I don't know. We talked about this matchup a fair amount. So
yeah, we did. All right.
We said CJ Anderson's going huge.
Yeah, we know.
Still trust the passing attack.
Right. Virgil Green. Okay, so I'm finally buying into your Virgil Green. I think Virgil Green, I like him as a sleeper this week. Tight end position. You see the last week, the Colts, they couldn't slow down Eric Ebron, so I think Virgil Green potentially could blow up.
Should we – just real quick, are there any other guys we wanted to talk about? I know there's one player I wanted to mention I forgot to in the matchup.
Okay.
If anybody else's takes to fire off. I think Willie Snead still. Don't be afraid of, like, a one-hit wonder last week if you got him. The Giants gave up a ton of work out of the slot to Cole Beasley, Terrence Williams, and Jason Witten last week.
102 okay. yards to be exact. Way to steal my take here.
Hey, I was the one that asked you for that when you were on your off day for where to find it next year.
Oh. So I'm basically your researcher.
Oh, my
cool. God. Anyways,
hell of a demotion.
Somebody's upset that I roasted him.
So much.
Roasted.
Anyways, so much salt at Casa Del Harbor.
I think Snead is a very safe play again this week.
Anybody else?
I would say I don't know if we got to Delanie Walker. We talked about Tennessee and Detroit. But
I don't think we did.
I think for some odd reason, the Titans thought it would be a good idea to split up 12 targets between Andre Johnson and Harry Douglas while Delanie Walker had, I think, 5 targets. And I think Mike Mularkey realized the error of his ways and said they're going to try to get Delanie Walker more involved. And, again, Detroit, they got lit up by some dude named Jack Doyle. So
Rainbow Six, baby.
You know, so so I feel like Delanie Walker is probably a better player than Jack Doyle, so I feel confident there.
Maybe. Watch Rainbow Six get another
Harmon,
touchdown.
Anybody else
Denver.
For you? Here, I'll throw another one out while you think.
No, I got
no,
I
he's
got
on
it.
He's on tilt, bro.
I'm crabs memeing, but I got one. Torrey Smith wouldn't surprise me if he had a nice bounce back effort here.
I love the fact that you love Torrey Smith but hate Mike Wallace. They're the same player.
I'm not gonna get into this discussion with you right now. I'm not being baited into more nonsense by you jerks here.
Okay. All right.
Torrey Smith played 91% of his snaps in week one at right wide receiver, which was way more than anybody else aligned anywhere else. And so that's an interesting thing to watch if he's going to continue to play there. If he plays there a lot, he's going to see a lot of Panthers rookie corner James Bradbury, who didn't exactly like get lit up in week one or anything. But Benae Benwickery was by far the Panthers' best corner. He allowed just 12.5% passes against him to be he registered a target rate of just 12.5%, which means the Broncos quarterback really avoided him. And I think he's going to slide into the slot a lot and guard Jeremy Curley. So I think this could be Torrey Smith's week, especially, again, if the 49ers are trailing and they have to throw a lot more. I might be just trying to die on the Torrey Smith hill here for one last ride, but I am interested to see if he bounces back here.
All right. This has been a Monster Pod. Let's do Daily Daps and get out.
Please.
Extra, extra, read all about it.
This is the day.
Daps and hooks. Give me daps, cause I be scribbling right.
Give me dapping up, daps abound, daps up.
All right, Daily Dap time. Alex Gellhart, we'll start with you.
The one I'm going to dap is this. It's a YouTube channel with guys that do really smart, really interesting stuff on movies and cinema. It's called Every Frame a Painting on YouTube. You can subscribe to their channel.
Okay.
I had watched one of theirs in the past, and I loved it. It was an in-depth breakdown. It was like 9 minutes about why Jackie Chan is like the master of action movies and fight scenes and why American movies by and large suck at them. And it was a really smart breakdown about how it's edited and how it's shot, and everything in American movies is so chaotic, but Jackie Chan is very deliberate in setting up his action and things like that, even punch by punch. It's phenomenal. If you like any Jackie Chan movies, go watch it, because you'll start it and you won't be able to stop for 10 minutes. And I watched one this morning too, called the Marvel Symphonic Universe, which was they prefaced the video by asking people, oh, can you hum me some of the Star Wars score? Or how about Harry Potter or this? What about a score from any one of the Marvel movies? Everybody came up blank. And it was because the Marvel movies have used very understated scores that just kind of elaborate what's on the screen. Like if somebody's scared, there's scary music. There's that stuff. The scores aren't dynamic and don't stand out by themselves. And they use that as an argument to describe how, by and large, blockbusters are all falling into this trap, and that's because a lot of them use temp music, whereas when they're editing initially, they'll just use music that sounds like what they want, but then that doesn't allow the composers to be free to do anything else, because a lot of times they're just like, oh, we'll just make it basically like that. And actually, I had a great story about how Warner Brothers got in trouble for that, because the 300 soundtrack was almost exactly the same soundtrack from the movie Titus with Anthony Hopkins. But anyways, Every Frame of Painting, if you're interested in movies and stuff like that and want to get smarter about them, go check it out. They've got some really, really amazing stuff.
All right, there you go. Matt Harmon, what you got for me, pal?
Yeah, last week, Daily Dapped our pal Sully from Twitter doing a podcast called the I Hate Sully podcast. Definitely make sure to check that out if you missed that last Daily Dap. I'm going to dap Uncle Chaps here, who also launched a podcast recently. I listened to the first episode. It's called Zero Blog 30, which is a pretty clever name. It's a good show. It's not... football related. It's not sports related at all. From the first listen, at least, Chaps talked about some of his thoughts on social issues of the day. And, you know,
is it just Chaps or does he have a co-host?
He had a guest on the first episode that I listened to, but it was good. Apparently, he jumped up the iTunes rankings right away on his first shot. But
beautiful.
It's through his new employer, so that helps too as well. So I am just really happy for Chaps that he's got a good gig. You know, he actually came on my podcast and right before he announced that and was really excited about it. So I'm happy that it's going so well for him. So daps, Chaps.
All right, MG, my guy, Marcus Grant.
I'm going to actually dap Twitter because I don't know if anybody had a chance to check out the game, the Thursday night game streaming on Twitter last night.
How cool was that?
It was very cool. Now, I didn't watch the whole thing. I was at home, so I watched it on a television. But I did tune in just because I was curious about it. I wanted to see what it was going to look like. And at least the portion that I watched near the beginning of the game, streaming was clear, was clean, the sound was great. It was just like watching it pretty much on television. So I'm very curious to see how it is received. It seemed like the reception was very great from the general public, and looking forward to seeing how it goes all throughout the year. But certainly daps to Twitter, daps to our employers here at the NFL for putting this thing together, because at least last night it was solid.
I've got multiple daps. I'm going to try to get through them very quickly. How about John Dornbos on America's Got Talent?
Did he win?
I don't know. I know who's a finalist, and I don't want to – you know, if he did or if he didn't, spoiler alert, I don't know. But John Dornbos, a magician, also a Vikings long snapper?
Yes.
I think is what his
– I thought he played for the Eagles.
The Eagles long snapper,
I don't know,
correct.
Whatever. Yeah. Okay, whatever. He's a long snapper. John Dornbos does awesome magic tricks. If you haven't seen him, I'm a sucker for magic, whatever. Just go look for John Dornbos, America's Got Talent.
I wanted to be a magician when I was a kid.
Who didn't, first of all?
I thought David Copperfield was dope.
Dude, boring.
John Dornbos is
you're boring.
Really cool. go check out Dorkly on YouTube. I've dapped them many times before, but that's okay. Dorkly on YouTube. If you're a video game dork or a comic book dork, you will love their YouTube channel, Dorkly on YouTube. I can't wait for The Magnificent Seven to come out.
Oh, yeah.
I think it's gotten kind of so-so reviews, but I will say this. I'm such a sucker for these types of movies, and little-known fact about me is that, man, who's starring in this movie now?
It's Denzel Washington. Denzel, Chris Pratt, Ethan Hawke. They've got a fantastic cast in it.
Denzel Washington, I don't know why I love Denzel Washington, but I have seen every Denzel Washington movie since like 1995.
Doesn't everybody love Denzel Washington?
Have you gone back to see Virtuosity?
I think that's the one. Is that pre 1995?
I believe it is. Okay. It is Denzel Washington and Russell Crowe. It was terrible.
Okay. Okay, there you go.
So wait, let's just real quick.
Yes.
Kicks and giggles.
Yep.
So the Pelican Brief?
Yep.
Philadelphia?
Yep.
Crimson Tide?
Yep.
All right, Virtuosity was in 95.
Oh.
Devil in a Blue Dress?
No.
Courage Under Fire?
Yes.
Preacher's Wife?
Yes.
I like that movie. Fallen?
Yes.
You Got Game?
Yes.
All right, I'm sure you're good from then on. what I will say about The Magnificent Seven, though, too, is I'm excited for it. I don't care if it's going to be like – it's probably not going to touch the original or anything. But
of course not.
I think it's going to be fun as hell because
there's actually two originals, actually, because there's the Western
Seven,
original.
Seven Samurai.
I was really going to be upset for Harmon for saying that, and then I remembered who it was saying.
Yeah.
Right.
But Antoine Fuqua is the director, and even if his movies aren't amazing, I mean, he's done a lot of good ones, like Training Day and stuff. He just directs badass movies. Like Shooter with Mark Wahlberg, I thought was going to be the dumbest movie ever.
I know, me too.
Love that.
I've seen that.
Yeah, yeah.
Like, it's.
What? What? You have not seen Shooter.
Its name
what?
Is
yes,
Shooter.
Oh, my God.
But it was
I've
awesome.
Seen it. I've seen actually, it's one of those ones that I've weirdly seen like 10 times.
I love it. Final Daily Dap, by the way. And I wish.
You got more?
Yeah, I know. Last one. I thought. It's too bad Francis is not here, but I came to this realization yesterday. NFL.com/fantasy. The content on the page now is unreal. Like I know I sound like a homer saying this, but can I be honest with you? So like 4 or 5 years ago, NFL.com/fantasy was not really a place that I would go to get a lot of fantasy advice.
Same.
If you're kind of a beginning player, like start them and sit them or whatever's great for you, that's good. But if you're more experienced or more seasoned type dude, that's not really an article that you're really going to, right? So like and that was the featured column. But now with all the great writers that NFL.com/fantasy has added, Harmon's done some great stuff, Franchise has done some great stuff, MG, Alex Gelhar, all of you guys have really put together such a great and unique content stream there on NFL.com/fantasy. And I came to that realization yesterday because I realized that it is now become, and I know this is going to sound so homerish, it's really become my one-stop shop for fantasy info. And I don't feel bad about saying that, because the thing about what you guys have done too is you also cite other great writers in the fantasy community. So if you start on NFL.com/fantasy, you can get out to all these other places. And like I said, I came to this realization yesterday, and I thought about what I thought about the site 5 years ago versus what I think about the site today. And it is really cool, and kudos to you guys. You guys are doing some really, really great stuff. So be sure to find all their stuff, NFL.com/fantasy.
That was really nice of you to say,
yeah.
James.
Yeah, thanks,
but
James.
We're still not buying your lunch.
And, you know, to your credit, you do more than just bring in, like, the orange slices. You're helping out too, pal. Appreciate it.
All right. Listen, pal. I come
some,
in.
Some
I do
good
something.
Columns. Panic Room, the Josh Norman one last year. News and Notes now. You're a part of this, James,
okay.
too.
Okay. All right. I do some new stuff. That's
all right. Let's all break up this podcast and just a hug and cry.
Yeah, well, let's get out of here and pat
like
ourselves
the
on the back.
It's like the Feelings podcast happened right here. At the
yes, the Feelings podcast. All right. Great episode. A super long one for you. I hope you enjoyed it. Subscribe today on iTunes or your favorite podcast app. We will see you later.
Oh, by the way, just for you guys, this has been cut now as well.
Doesn't matter for fantasy.
That is so good.
Hey, seriously, I keep saying it, but I don't know, like, I don't know what came over me in that moment. I don't, like, some otherworldly force.
Oh, man.
I became a different person.
Your voice was just so perfect for that. Like, every time you've tried to recreate it since, it hasn't gotten there.
Doesn't matter for fantasy.
I can't do it again.
So great.